Good morning and welcome to Missoula Real Estate Today. This is Peter Christian. I'm here with the host of the show, Diane Beck, with Windermere Real Estate. Diane's been selling real estate in Missoula for over 20 years, and she's very active in the Missoula community.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Unfortunately, our good friend Diane Beck is absent today for one reason or another, but that's okay. We will carry on Missoula Real Estate Today. I'm Peter Christian. I'm kind of the co-host. But it's nice to have a guest here in the studio. We're visiting with Miles Link. Now, we hear a lot about you at the end of every show. Diane brags on you big time as one of her valued partners in what she's trying to do with her real estate business. And, of course, she's a sponsor of the show of Missoula Real Estate Today. So, first of all, welcome. It's good to see you again.
Thanks. Yeah, it's nice to be back. It's been a month or two.
Now, the name of your business has recently changed to American Federal Savings Bank, right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So tell me what that means to you.
Well, Sterling Savings, which we were at before, they worked hard to find a good fit for us. What they the Montana Sterlings, the banks and the mortgage department, just didn't fit into their model anymore, so they kind of worked to find a good fit for us here in Montana, and we've landed with American Federal Savings Bank based out of Helena, Montana. Montana-owned company.
So tell us exactly what American Federal Savings Bank does for the folks who are listening out in our audience this morning.
Well, it's a Montana-based company that has been around since the 1920s, mainly some branches in Helena, Townsend, and Butte, Bozeman, and then now with our addition, they've kind of broadened their spectrum with Missoula, Billings, Hamilton, and some of the other markets that they weren't in before. With us, it's a good addition. It's given us some other products. You know, most of the lending nowadays is fairly vanilla, but it has added some products for us that we didn't have as good access to before, such as, you know, we have great in-house construction lending now. We used to more so farm that out to some of the other institutions, so we have that availability now, and some great portfolio-type lending that we keep in the bank for the bank's portfolio. That's just stuff that doesn't fit maybe the cookie-cutter mold that we're kind of in nowadays.
Sure. Of course, this is a real estate show, so we want to talk about real estate lending. Now, as we have come into 2013... thankfully, thanks to the wonderful beings in Washington, D.C., we didn't go tumbling off the fiscal cliff, at least too badly. So, from your perspective at American Federal Savings Bank, how are we doing as we're going into 2013 when it comes to the money that's available to lend for folks who want to purchase a home?
Sure. You know, the rates have still stayed very, very good. We haven't seen much of a rate change over the last, you know, 3-4 months. It's been fairly stagnant, ticking up slightly back down, settling back down. But money's still available. The loan programs are still out there. And with the interest rate environment, I'm looking forward to 2013.
Let's talk about interest rates, because whenever I speak with somebody in your business, and of course, Diane as well, we hear the term historically low interest rates.
Sure.
I mean, can you explain that term, what that means, historically low? I mean, have they ever been this low, or have they been this low for this long of a time?
You know, for this long of a time, I really don't know the answer to that. I know, I believe in the 1940s, we saw some rate environment that's similar to what we're in right now. Back in 2006, 2008, you know, we thought, boy, these rates are just great. Never imagined even a year and a half ago that we'd be where we are now for this long a time. I mean, it's just... I think, you know, inevitably, if the economy starts to turn and the consumer starts to realize that, I think we're going to, you know, eventually start to see the rate environment go up as the economy starts to turn around. So right now, we're sitting in a pretty good position for buying a home.
Well, I remember like a million years ago when I bought my first home back in the 1970s, and I was thrilled beyond words to get an interest rate that was like under 12 or 13%, or at that time it was sometimes 17-18%. So for folks who don't know what that's like,
right,
can you explain the difference between an interest rate of like 17% and an interest rate of like 3.5%, of what that means to the consumer?
Well, you know, really it means a lot more buying power. Unfortunately, with the time that's elapsed over from the 70s to now, the price of homes has gone up as well.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So, you know, you definitely do, though, have quite a bit more buying power, even from a year and a half ago where the rates were maybe 1% higher than we are now. You know, a person's able to buy a little bit more home for the same amount of money on a monthly basis out of their pocket. And so, you know, right now, I think really it's just being able to afford the home that you want, or maybe even a home that you never thought you could get because of where the rates are.
Exactly. And I think that can be a driving force sometimes. But again, that's where the wise lender will say, now, you know, the interest rates are very low, but let's not get too overboard. I mean, because we don't want to get beyond a point where we can actually afford what we're getting into.
Yeah, and we don't want to get into the situation, you know, that we're kind of getting out of now.
Right, exactly,
you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, really, when I sit down with somebody, I want to make sure, one, that the payment ultimately they're comfortable with. They mm-hmm. have other things that they enjoy doing, their lifestyle.
You want to eat every now and
yeah,
then.
Yeah, and we want to make sure we put them into a payment that they are comfortable with. Just because we can qualify for X amount of dollars mm-hmm. doesn't mean that the person feels comfortable with that. So given the low rates, we still want to make sure and be prudent with the way the person's lifestyle is and make sure they can afford that payment.
Well, our guest in studio at Missoula Real Estate today, Diane is absent today. I'm Peter Christian. Miles Link is with us from American Federal Savings Bank. Miles, if you will, let's say I'm a single guy. I'm in my 20s. I've got a good job. Maybe I've got a car payment. Maybe I've got a student loan. And I'm really interested in purchasing a home because, you know, eventually I want to get married, have a family, that sort of thing. So when I come in and sit down with you, what kind of things do you to ask to determine what I can afford and how I can get a loan?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of start with, you know, whether you've owned a home before or not. You know, that really lets me know what kind of knowledge you may or may not have, and then we're looking at, you know, what your stability, your job is, income, and then the assets. The assets are really a lot of times a determining factor as to what product we may be able to put you into. You know, the more down payment is a conventional loan. If you don't have much of a down payment or any down payment at all, there are some other alternatives there for those types of products. And that kind of steers us into what product might work best for you based on the assets you have that you're planning on putting as a down payment and or income. And then ultimately, how long you want to stay in the home. You know, are you going to stay in the home a long time? Is this a starter home? Are you engaged? You know, your family's going to increase soon. You know,
right.
The last thing I guess you want to do is buy a home today and know in 18 months you're going to outgrow it. So you kind of have to plan for the future if you can.
Now, are there still people out there that do the house flipping where they'll buy a house and fix it up and flip it and buy a house and fix it up and flip it? And do you work with folks like that as well? Is that kind of an unusual? That's a phenomenon from several years ago, but is it still happening today?
You know, I think there are some things like that happening out there. I would say, you know, unfortunately, Diane's not here today. She probably
right.
would have a better idea of what kind of things are going on in that respect with the houses that are actually on the market, mm-hmm. whether they were flipped or not. I think there's some of that. I don't know that there's as much of that available that there used to be. You know,
yeah.
The biggest thing back, you know, 6 years ago, with the values the way they were going up, I mean, in the lack of product out there as far as houses, you know, it was a viable option for somebody that had the money to go in and try to do something like that. I don't know now that the environment's as conducive for that as it was before.
Sure, and there's a lot more inventory now, yeah. and of course that gives a lot of power to the buyer over the seller. Where again, when the supply is short, the whole law of supply and demand is amazing, isn't it? And if the government would just kind of step aside and let the market have its way, do you think it looks like things might even out a little bit?
I think so. And I mean, again, that's, you know, Diane really has her finger on the pulse when it comes to that. But I mean, I believe that the, you know, in our market, the supply has gone down. And I think in 2013, you know, we saw a good uptick in purchase business in 2012. And I think 2013, I think we'll continue to see that, which then helps, you know, the supply tighten back up. And then, of course, then the next thing goes, you know, that increases the construction side of it. And
sure.
So construction's one side that we haven't seen as much of. And And I think we'll see more of that going forward as this supply starts to tighten back up.
One of the things you said at the outset of the show, Miles, was the fact that you do have some more products available to folks who are interested in building a home. And, of course, a construction loan is a different animal than just a regular real estate loan, right?
That's correct, yeah. What that, you know, is designed for is it's a short-term financing designed to provide the funds to build a home and or purchase the lot along with it. And then build the home, and then we would get you into your end financing or your, you know, conventional type mortgage at the end of that phase. But, you know, that allows you to, you know, find a piece of land, or if you own a piece of land already, to get financing to be able to build something that fits your needs specifically on that piece of land.
How much traditionally, when you look at financing a project, how much percentage-wise do you look at is healthy between the cost of the land and the cost of the structure?
Well, you know, we like to, obviously, the 50-50 mark's usually kind of that top end.
Right.
You know, 60-40 is sometimes, and it just really varies on, boy, if you're buying a 20-acre piece, you know, your house is going to be potentially closer to that 50-50 mark than if you're buying a 1-acre or a half-acre piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
So that number really varies, but we don't run into that a whole lot on new construction because most of the time that the home is going to cost more than the land if it's a smaller piece of land.
Okay. So now when it comes time to make the loan, I do commercials for a living, and one of my favorite techniques when I talk about going in for a loan is I take the word alone. And it's like you feel like you're all alone. You're going into this big office, and the guy's got a big adding machine or a calculator, and he's got the fingers flying. He's got the little, you know, the little deal. He's got it looks like an old bookkeeper, and
oh yeah,
and you're sitting there and you're feeling smaller and smaller and smaller in front of this great big desk as the paper continues to, you know, to fly off, and you wonder, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? So let's dispel that myth. What is it like when people come in to visit with you at American Federal Savings Bank? What's the procedure like?
You know, I mean, really, I like to make it somewhat informal. You know, I mean, we're talking about a big transaction here, probably the largest transaction of your life.
Right.
And so it's not anything to take lightly. However, you know, we don't want to have that nervous tension either. And so really just, you know, I try to go through with them and explain the process from A to Z, look at their income. And I try to explain to them, here's what I'm doing here. I'm looking at your income. I want to, you know, and ask them the questions, get the background, and then, you know, try to make it more of a information gathering and not so much of, you know, I'm on one side of the desk and you're on the other.
Not like an interrogation,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah, more of just an information gathering. So we both are on the same page and, you know, I'm answering the questions that they have. And they're answering the questions I have to make sure we're kind of working together to get to the same ending point, which is ultimately getting a loan to purchase that home. And hopefully it's a pretty smooth process. And I think that most people, once they've gone through it, it's a lot less daunting than they think it's going to be when they on the onset.
What are some roadblocks, Miles, for folks who come in to see you who want to purchase a home and you sit down with them? And What are some bumps in the road that you encounter with folks that maybe the folks who are listening could say, maybe if I can get that taken care of now before I go see Miles, it wouldn't be such a roadblock?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's really, some people want to get rid of all their debt and they, you know, and ultimately, you know, that's obviously a good thing. One thing that people have to be aware of is, a certain amount of debt or past debt in as far as credit history is a healthy thing.
Right, because you know, they don't know whether to loan you money if you have no credit history.
Right, and I think that's kind of a myth sometimes that people think, well, you know, I've never taken out a loan. I've paid cash for everything, and so I'm going to come in and I'm going to be able to get this loan. Well, some of the hurdles that we run into nowadays is everything is so much, unfortunately, credit score driven in a lot of instances. And some folks that pay cash for everything, they don't have a credit score. And what they, you know, so I always tell people it might be, even if it's a secured card, you know, you put the $200 down and you use it, and it's secured with a CD or whatever it may be to build up some credit if you don't have credit, because we do run into that where folks have used cash so much.
If you could please, and you bring up a really good point, Miles Link again with us, American Federal Savings Bank here on Missoula Real Estate Today. Could you please explain the whole process of what a credit score is and how you get one, and if you got a bad one, how do you improve it?
Yeah, you know, there are three scores that we use in the mortgage world. There's three credit bureaus in the country, and each individual institution that you may have a loan from, a credit card, they report your payments, on-time payments, late payments, no payments, that kind of thing, to one or all three of the credit bureaus. And so when we pull a credit report on you, we're going to get a score from each of the three bureaus. And the reason we do what's called a tri-merge to get all three is because you may have a credit card that only reports to one of the bureaus. So we want to get a full picture of all the bureaus to make sure that all your debts being recorded, that we have a picture of it. You know, it weights everything from on-time payments to what your credit limit is on credit cards, to how much balance you have on your credit card, credit history as far as length of time certain accounts have been open. And so it weights all of those factors in the models that they use are proprietary, so nobody actually knows exactly.
It's like Colonel Sanders' secret recipe, right?
Exactly. Nobody knows exactly how the bureaus come up with this score, but we have a pretty good idea of you know, what factors adversely affect your credit or positively affect it. And then to get, you know, if you have some late payments, unfortunately, sometimes it's really just time. You know, maybe you don't have any negative debt out there as far as collection accounts or things you haven't paid, but just some late payments. And unfortunately, sometimes it's just time that heals that late payment, you know?
Okay. Because I hear horror stories of people who apply for a loan or apply for a home loan or a car loan or whatever, and the credit score comes back, oh my gosh, I thought I was up at 800 and they're like at 550 or 560. Now, is there a way to find out what's in that credit score? And if so, how to fix it?
Well, we definitely, when you have a credit score, it does give, you know, the credit reports do give you some information. That's what types of things on that credit report are adversely affecting the score. You know, that's where I would sit down with the borrower and look it over. And I have a pretty good idea. And of course, the borrower, once we went through the credit report, would have a pretty good idea what the negative impacts are. And then it's just sometimes it's a matter of just setting out a plan over the next 12 months or 6 months or whatever it may be to clean up one thing or multiple things and try to get the score up where it needs to be. And the reason why having credit is so important is you kind of look at, you know, you might get a $200,000 loan, and as a bank or an institution, we want to know what's your capability of managing that kind of debt?
Are you good for it?
Right. And so some folks don't understand that when they've paid cash for everything and have never had a loan and never had a credit card, they don't have a history of managing debt. And I always kind of put it along the lines, if you're going to go have a surgery from a doctor, you'd kind of maybe want to know that the doctor's performed that surgery a few times before, and this isn't his first one.
Right, exactly. which hand do I hold the scalpel in?
Yeah. Right.
That's always a trouble, the red light going off in your head there.
Right.
So I think it's also important for borrowers, or especially folks who don't have a lot of experience in borrowing, is to put yourself, if you will, in the place of the person who actually has that big bag of money they want to lend you. And they're saying, okay, well, you know, this money just didn't magically appear one day. I mean, our company's worked hard. We've put together these, you know, all these investors that want to make our company successful. Well, the way we're successful is lending you money so that you pay it back, and we have an interest rate and we make a profit, and it's the whole capitalistic thing. So I think it's important for people to realize that where the money is coming from, those are people too, and they also have a business that they have to run. And so it's not just, you know, give me the money. This is a very big business, and it's important to understand the rules.
And that's, you're exactly right. And the picture's, you know, quite a bit bigger and complex than maybe it seems. But ultimately, that money is coming from people like you and me.
Right.
When we're doing
investors,
when we're
right.
investing.
Right.
And so that investor wants to know that they're going to get a said return on their investment. And so there's those certain rules that are set in place and to make to give the guarantees to that investor to the best that we can that this, you know, loan is going to perform. You're
and,
right.
And the other thing too is with interest rates so low, hovering, you know, 3.5-4% or whatever, the return on that investment to the investor is not as big as it would be if the interest rates were up 10%, 15%, 17% the way they were back in the 70s. So there's two ways of looking at every situation.
Yeah, you're right. And it is good for, you know, I think you're right. You hit it when you said if you put the person in the other seat and explain to them, you know, if you were lending the money, mm-hmm. What would you feel comfortable with? And that really puts it in perspective a lot of times. With that being said, you know, there are some misnomers, I mean, out there. It's really not as hard to get a loan nowadays as people think.
Now, I'm really glad you said that because there are some preconceived notions that, yes, interest rates are low, but nobody's lending any money. And so is that true or not?
You know, it just really isn't true. You know, there are still a lot of the exotic, I guess, if you say mortgages and products out there are gone, but we still have some of the low down products, the, you know, minimal down payment products. And so, you know, most folks that were getting loans before still getting loans.
Let's talk for a second about some of those products because a person like me who's, you know, all my life pretty much lived paycheck to paycheck, just a blue-collar guy, even though I, you know, slave over a hot mic all day. But are there loans where I don't have to come up with a whole lot of money down? Because I think that can be a real stumbling block to folks who just haven't had a chance to gather together a bunch of savings.
Yeah, I mean, there are only a few left out there, but we have, you know, if a person is a veteran, we have mm-hmm. the VA loan, which doesn't require the down payment, and then also a USDA-backed loan. It's called Rural Development. A lot of people have heard of that. There are some stipulations on location.
But they can't be in the city limits for that,
city
right?
limits, okay. And there's some income limitations and that sort of thing, but that's also a no-down loan. And then from there, you know, we start at 3% down and go up from there. And so there are some minimal down payment loans, no down payment loans, and oftentimes some of those loans, maybe that is a lot of times the hurdle is the down payment. You know, not everybody has the capability, but sometimes if it's out there, you know, some of those down payments can be gifted from a family member or something like that just to get you in the door.
I was going to say, is it possible to borrow the down payment or is that frowned upon?
You can get it as a gift
okay.
from family members. There's some stipulations. You can't go take out another loan for a down payment. That doesn't work. But definitely there are some gift options on certain loan programs. And so, you know, we try to do everything we can to make it work as far as the down payment, because you're right. I mean, a lot of times the hurdle for a borrower isn't the monthly payment because they're living somewhere mm-hmm. now. They're paying that payment. It's where do I come up with that down payment?
So what are some of the advantages between just a regular loan and a government-backed loan?
Well, really the advantages for the borrower are going to be most of
or
the
conventional
government,
loans, what I mean.
Yeah, most of the government-backed loans are going to be your lower down payment type products that are backed by the government. Interest rates for all the loans are pretty comparable across the board. And then some of your government loans do have a little bit more leeway on credit score. So your credit score, you may not fit into the conventional realm, but
sure.
the credit score may fit into one of the government loans. So really it's just a credit score leniency and potentially being able to get in with little or no down payment.
Now, what about mortgage insurance? Because I've noticed that there are some that don't require mortgage insurance and some that do.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it and why do we have to have it?
And really, the conventional loans now, if you have less than 20% down, will require the mortgage insurance. Or even Rural Development now has went that way. Or VA loan doesn't require mortgage insurance.
Now, mortgage insurance is simply to make fact that if you default on the loan, there's an insurance company that pays them back.
Pays the lender back,
right,
yeah. And
right.
so what it's a protection. It's an insurance policy for the lender
right.
that if you default on the loan, we're not going to come after you for the money. The mortgage in a broad spectrum, the mortgage insurance company is going to kick in the difference of what we can sell that home for versus what you owe, and then ultimately pay that difference, and so we're made whole. And that's what it's there for. And unfortunately, it's an insurance policy for the lender, but the borrower has to pay it.
And it's an important matter when you come down to that balance sheet to say, you know, yeah, you can probably afford the loan. The interest rate is good, but let's talk about the mortgage insurance and make sure that's not a deal breaker.
Right. And that's where, you know, sometimes the credit score becomes an issue on a conventional loan. And you might have to go to a government type loan, is there are some mortgage insurance, the requirements for the mortgage insurance piece on its own are sometimes more stringent than the loan itself. So we could get you the loan, but the mortgage insurance company have different credit score requirements for and reserve requirements as far as how much money you need to have in the bank. And so sometimes it's the mortgage insurance piece that's the harder piece of the puzzle to take care of, and rightly so. Those are the companies of the last 6 years have taken the largest hits, and you know, over 50% of the company mortgage insurance companies are out of business now.
Exactly. So it's important to make sure you have, and that's part of what you do, as is you kind of like a financial counselor, in that when you're trying to arrange this loan and you think you've got all your ducks in a row, and then you boop, there's the mortgage insurance. I forgot about that. So you got to make sure that everything is out there for the consumer to understand.
Right, and that's where that initial consultation comes into play, so we can kind of look at what they have for credit, what they have for down payment, income, so we can determine right up front what program you're going to fit into, mm-hmm. and if you're going to be able to qualify for the mortgage insurance or not, or do we have to go to a different program. And so, yeah, hopefully when a person leaves my office, they have all the knowledge to know why they didn't fit this program, mm-hmm. or why they should go this way. And you put it all out in front, and ultimately it's their decision, and it's they get multiple choices, hopefully.
Now, I understand there's a percentage, there's a formula that you work by to say, okay, the lender is not only going to allow you to borrow this much as opposed to what your net income is when it comes to purchasing a home. Is that still in effect?
Yeah, you know, and a lot of the systems now are automated.
Are they?
And so that automated system, and you've heard of Freddie and Fannie, and
right,
they haven't,
right.
They've had some, you know, pretty negative news, you know, over the last few years. But ultimately, those two institutions are what they set the rules, and that's what the money funnels through to allow us to keep lending. And so they have automated systems now, and that automated system weights everything. I mean, a borrower that has a higher credit score, their what we call debt ratio, which is their amount of debt to their income, may be able to go a little higher than a person that doesn't have as good of a credit score. And that's where it all comes into, even though we have this automated system that says we can approve you for this much, you know, we have to sit down with the borrower and say, you know, I can approve you for this much, but that doesn't mean that that's where you feel comfortable, because you need to ultimately feel comfortable with that payment.
And real quickly, what's the difference between being pre-approved and pre-qualified?
Yeah, so pre-qualified is typically you would come in, we would go over your income, your assets, kind of give you a general idea of what amount of the amount of loan that you'd qualify for, and that's pre-qualified. As far as pre-approved, we would want to have all the documentation in place, all the W-2s, pay stubs, anything like that. And then also on top of that, we would have pulled credit and determined from the credit report and everything else that, I mean, you're ready to go. So fully pre-approved.
Believe it or not, Miles Link, American Federal Savings Bank, we've spent a half an hour talking today. So really appreciate it. How can folks get in touch with you?
Yeah, our office is at 2800 South Reserve, or definitely call my direct line, which is 203-4310.
All right, we really appreciate you being with us.
Thanks again.
Thanks
nice
for the
to be
information.
Back.
You bet. All right, thanks so much. And again, for our good friend Diane Beck, who wasn't able to be with us today, we hope that you'll join us again next week for another edition of Missoula Real Estate Today. Our guest has been Miles Link from American Federal Savings Bank. I'm Peter Christian. Hopefully you'll join us again next week, Saturday and Sunday, right here on News Talk 1290 KGVO AM and 101.5 FM. You guys have a great week, and we'll see you next weekend.
Thanks for tuning in to Missoula Real Estate Today. If you have any suggested topics or any questions, please email Diane. And here's the address. It's Diane Beck at Realtor.com. Diane Beck at Realtor.com. See you next week.